Thank you for this nice conference. And today I'm going to talk about the singularity problem. And I will start by mentioning something that we all agree with, which is despite the elegance of the theory and despite the phenomenological success of general relativity, we do have very good reason to go beyond it. And we are talking about quantum gravity the whole week, so I don't think I need to convince you of that. But today I'm going to focus on a related, of course, problem, which is the singularity one. And this picture is taken by the famous 1965 paper by Perros, in which he proved, it was the first paper of a series that proved that general relativity predicts its own demise, because it predicts the breakdown of the theory itself. And of course, we have a very simple way to deal with singularity, which is to think about the cosmic censorship conjectures. In particular here, I have written the weak form of the conjecture, which is basically telling us that for observer at infinity, singularities are never visible because they are always shielded behind event horizons. And this means that it might be tempted to assume that any effects of singularity and singularity regularization will be hidden from us. So I usually start answering this question in two different ways, which is, why do we care then? And the first thing I want to say is something that can be drawn, it's a lesson that can be drawn from Newtonian gravity. So let's for a moment imagine that we are bounded in a region of the universe in which we have no access to high energy phenomena and no access of strong gravity effects. We know that in this region, Newtonian gravity is a good approximation of the theory of gravity. And so the question is, should we then accept the impossibility of testing physics beyond Newton? We know the answer to this question, and the answer is no. And the reason why the answer is no is because, for instance, gravitational waves. So gravitational waves are an effect which is generated in the region of strong gravity, in which Newtonian gravity breaks down. But then they propagate also where we expect the Newtonian gravity to work. So we can build a detector here on Earth. And of course, we will never build a detector if we didn't study general relativity first. So what I want to say here is that as physicists, we should not exclude the possibility of modification to percolate outside the horizon. And so we should study this possibility and see whether or not those can be tested. And of course, we need a framework to do that. And so this is what I'm going to talk about today. And the second reason why I think we should care, and I'm saying that mostly to start a discussion during the panel session, because I think most people will disagree with me, is that it's not always true that even in the presence of event horizon, it's not always true that singularities are always, in the future, are always invisible from outside of several of their effects. Because if you have a black hole that evaporates completely, we do have regions in which semiclassical gravity works well, but they are in the causal future of the singularity. So what I would like to discuss later in the panel discussion is the fact that it will seem a little bit strange to me if the solution of the information loss paradox will not take into account what's happening at the singularity. Because if now I draw a Perros diagram of the causal structure of something that is very similar to black holes in general relativity for a very long time, but that does not have any singularity and evaporates in finite time, so this is a regular black hole in which you have a trapped region, but you do not have an event horizon, then everything that goes in should eventually go out, and you should never have information loss. And of course, this does not mean that this will trivially solve the problem. We should still understand how it goes out. But this is just to say that these two diagrams should have very different effects. And so this is kind of the, these were the motivation to start this, to study this problem. And I hope we will discuss this motivation later. And this is kind of the outline of the quick outline of today's talk. So we will start by introducing the framework that I'm going to work. So of course there will be limitation to this framework, and this is what I want to stress, and I also would like to stress the strengths. And then this will introduce some candidates for mimickers of black holes, so objects that mimic black holes, but they are not singular. And we will then study some viability issues, basically some, today we will mainly, we only study stability issues. And finally, we will try to address these issues. And you can see a question mark here, because in the last section, I will have more questions than answers, which is something that I think it's always nice in physics. So let's start by this classification. I will be very fast, because this is not what I want to focus today's talk. On the other hand, I think it's good to set up the stage. And I mentioned before Perrow's singularity, or probably more precisely, incompleteness theorem. And these are the assumptions of the theorem. So we start by considering a space-time in which we have a trapped surface. And the first assumption is that we can use the standard tools of differential geometry to describe the space-time. Once we accept that, we assume global hyperbolicity to have a well-defined initial value problem. And finally, we assume some convergent condition, that null convergent condition that are equivalent to the Einstein equation and the null energy condition. If we do that, we can then prove that the space-time is geodesically incomplete. Now, we want a geodesically complete space-time, so we need to violate some of these assumptions. And in particular, we will drop the last one. And so we keep assuming the first two, but then we want a space-time which is geodesically complete, and then we want also to avoid curvature singularities. So now classifying different black holes, different non-singular black holes is the same question as classifying the way to avoid the theorem. I will not enter into the classification, but this slide is important because I want to stress that this assumption is, of course, the one that might break down. And this is the framework I was mentioning before. We need a framework to study this problem, and we will analyze the consequences of this framework. And we should keep in mind the limitation come from the assumption, but this is good because at the end of the day, we will look at the conclusions, maybe try to test the conclusion, and if we don't like the results, we can always go back. So we will see that the results are still, in my opinion, still general enough and interesting enough even with this assumption. So we get the first result that you can classify this space-time with a few classes of geometries. In particular, we will focus today on two of them. So the first one is the regular black holes that I showed before, the Perrow's diagram, which are some very conservative solution to the singularity problem, which you have an outer horizon, and you replace the singularity by an inner horizon and a regular region. And then there is a more, very less conservative resolution, which is a more radical reformulation of the space-time, which is constituted by horizonless ultra-compact objects. So you do not have horizons at all, and you have a surface or a boundary, so somewhere close to the Woolby horizon. And having said that, let's move to the part of the talk in which we study the possible issues with these geometries. Let me mention that what I'm going to say will apply to these classes, so there will be something left out we can discuss later, of course. So let's start with regular black holes, and this is the metric that we can consider, because we are starting from the static configuration. The promotion to the dynamical case will be quite simple. And in the static configuration, we get this causal structure here. And just by fixing the asymptotics, we want to recover Schwarzschild, and then we do not want singularity at the interior. We can show that the condition for the horizon, which is that this function f is zero, is met an even number of times. So this is how we get that we have both the outer and the inner horizon. And something that is going to be important is that the surface gravity at the outer horizon is positive in this with this convention, like in the standard black hole space-time. And the inner horizon, you have the opposite sign. These are just some example of metric that at this stage we can just take like like working metrics. Of course, these are justified in many, many toy models coming from quantum gravity. It's never a full computation, but they are inspired by quantum gravity computation, and we very often get some of these geometries or something similar, which has slightly different functional form, but with similar properties. And the causal structure that you've seen before is, as you can see, exactly the same as the causal structure of Reznor-Norzon black hole, with the difference that R equals zero was regular before, and now it's just singular. And we know that for Reznor-Norzon black hole, there is the inner horizon is unstable. In that case, this is actually a nice feature because it will save the strong cosmic censorship conjecture, which is telling us that the theory must be predictable, so we do not want Cauchy horizon. So we want to predict the fate of observer in all the manifold. And we had time-like singularities, and that's turned into an Hausdorff space-like singularity. So this is actually a wake-home feature. But now we ask, is the same going to happen also in this case? In this case, we do not want singularities. So we want to study the stability of the inner horizon, even for regular black holes. Of course, there is an obvious problem immediately, which is the fact that we do not know the field equation. We do not know the theory that these regular black holes are a solution of. And so, as I will show, we can arrive up until a certain point just with the geometrical approach and with very few assumptions. And in the following, I will give a few details. And all I want to do is to give you the answer to this question. So what are these assumptions and what are the limitations of the approach? And so let's start by this analysis. So we want to study stability, which means we have the background geometry. We add a small perturbation on top of it. And the easiest case of example of perturbation that will work for us is just two null shells. So we have two null shells, three and four, that meet in two surface and then give rise to other two null shells. And we will focus close to the inner horizon. So this perturbation is a reasonable perturbation because black holes are not in vacuum, they are accreting matter. And also because close to the inner horizon, we can, because of the blue shift, the fact that we have thin shells is a good approximation. So we will take this perturbation and we will put it close to the inner horizon. We'll make them merge closer and closer to the inner horizon. And these steps that I've written here are completely 100% geometrical steps. And you can write down a relation for the Meissner-Sharp mass in the region A of the divided by the shells in terms of quantities, the same quantity in the region B, and some this quantity I call M in and M out, which are the jump of the Meissner-Sharp mass across the shells. So there is no assumption yet at this point. Now, the only assumption is what is this jump of the Meissner-Sharp mass? And we assume that the shell will just shift the value of the asymptotic mass that can be measured, the value of the mass that can be measured asymptotically, which is, I believe, a very minor and reasonable assumption. Of course, if gravity completely switches off and it will not see the perturbation at all, then this assumption will break down. But this is, in my opinion, a very, very minor assumption. And this is the only one at this stage. And so doing this assumption, skipping the details because they are not particularly important, we arrive to this result here where V is the advanced time coordinate. So we arrive to the result that no matter how small is the initial perturbation, and you will always have perturbation in black holes in astrophysics, you will get a huge back reaction on the geometry because you will get an exponential enhancement here. And this is all we can see at this stage. Now we can refine the analysis by considering a different type of perturbation. In particular, we can replace the two null shells with one null shell and a continuous flux of matter. And the assumptions are basically the same also in this analysis. Now the result, they are slightly less universal. They kind of depend on the model of regular black holes that you consider. And you get that in some cases, for instance, for this metric here, you still have an exponential instability. And in some other cases, you analytically get the late time behavior is a polynomial instability. So you might think that this is a milder type of instability. But you can also show that there is a universal transient in which the stability is always exponential, no matter the details of the metric. So this is again a universal feature. And furthermore, you can also show that the point at which the polynomial behavior starts, it's well beyond the regime of validity of the model. Because let me remind this, we took the background geometry, we add a perturbation, and here we are plotting the Meissner-Sharpe mass, which enter in the curvature invariant. And it starts from a value which is around 10, and then it gets to 10 to the 25 before you get the change of regime. So the model breaks down much, much before that. So again, you can say that even for this different type of perturbation, which is a more refined, probably, type of perturbation, you can show that you have a huge back reaction of geometry. Now, I mentioned the static case, and I've shown you already two causal structures, which are completely different for the static and the dynamical case. In particular, the inner horizon for the static case, for the eternal case, is a Cauchy horizon. And so one might be tempted to say that the instability is due to the nature of the inner horizon. This is a Cauchy horizon. So you see that if this corresponds to the advanced time goes to plus infinity, so you have a piling up because of that. We have an infinite piling up because of that. Whereas here, you always have a finite piling up. And this is true, but it's also true that if the time scale of the stability is smaller than the time scale of variability of the geometry, which is what we expect, then you should recover the same result. And this is basically what we get, which is you can see this is basically the same plot. So now this is the trapped region, this is the outer, and this is the inner horizon, and this is the shell I was telling you about. You can see this pile up at the inner horizon for a very long time, and then it finally escapes. And again, the stability is exponential for a very long time. So the result is that even in the dynamical case, we get exactly the same result. And if you think about the fact that the physics is local, and then you have a separation of scale between the two time scale, then this is obvious. But if you look only at the causal structure, this might confuse you. So this is why we are going to submit this work soon. So this was the instability regarding the regular black holes, and I'll just check the time. Okay. So, and then now let me ask, what about the horizonless object? Because for horizonless object, you do not have an inner horizon anymore. And just for concreteness, let's take this metric, which is one of the regular black hole metric I was showing you before. And you have this regularization parameter L that, of course, if L goes to zero, you recover Schwarzschild. And if L gets very, very large, you get larger and larger deviation. And so here I'm showing the outer, this red line, and the inner horizon, this green line here, as a function of the value of L. And you can see that for a large value of L, these two merge, and you no longer have an inner horizon. So we might tempted to immediately say there is no instability. On the other hand, here I'm also plotting the light ring of the geometry, which is for Schwarzschild is a 3M, which is correspond to a maximum of to a saddle point of defective potential, and you can show that as soon as you no longer have an horizon, you will get an inner light ring, which corresponds to a minimum point of defective potential. Now, this can be actually shown in complete generality. For every horizon of the spacetime, you will have a second light ring, which is a stable light ring. Stable meaning it's the minimum point of the effective potential. And now, if you have a minimum of the effective potential, you have the perturbation might pile up there. So if you kick up one of these objects, the gravitational perturbation, some of it will be emitted by gravitational waves. Some of them will pile up at the minimum of the effective potential. And this might trigger a nonlinear instability. And this is actually shown for a specific model of for some specific model of boson star. Boson stars, for those of you who are not familiar, are just a star made of bosons. So you pick a Lagrangian with a repulsive potential for bosons, and you can get some stable configuration in which we have which compass configuration, compass stars. So we get the nice result that as soon as we get rid of the inner horizon instability, we get another source of instability. And of course, if this parameter is too large, we no longer have a light ring, this will be excluded experimentally because we have seen the light ring for the gravitational wave observation and for the, we've tested the physics of the light ring with the gravitational waves observation and the event horizon telex observation. So the question is, does it mean that there is no stable alternative to black hole? And so as I said, I want to say something to address these issues. And this will be based on this paper and then many open questions. So first of all, let's talk about for regular black holes. We've seen that we have this exponential instability, which is driven by the value of the surface gravity at the inner horizon. So we might ask, okay, is it possible to construct a geometry where the surface gravity vanishes? In that case, would we have an instability anyway? And if you look at the expression of the surface gravity, then you can understand that, yes, definitely, of course, you can build up this geometry. You just need the derivative to vanish when f is zero. So you have a flex, and then you have a lot of freedom. You can do whatever you want. And so we just wrote down this geometry. This stage is just writing it down and testing with the same type of perturbation we were testing before to show that there is no traces of instability. So with a double null shell, we get that a small perturbation causes a small effect. And with the other model, in which we have one null shell and one flux of energy, given that you need to do it numerically, so we can never prove that there is no instability for infinite time because your numerics should stop at some point. But you can show that as the surface gravity gets smaller and smaller, the onset of instability gets longer and longer. And once the surface gravity is exactly zero, you never see it. So again, there is no trace of instability. But of course, this sparked the question, are these inner extremal black holes reasonably, like, we have I was mentioned before, we have several quantum gravity models that give us something that looks like a regular black hole, but in none of those models, the surface gravity is actually zero. So are these objects reasonable or fine-tuned? There is a very quick answer to that, and the answer is that I have no idea. But let's try to think a little bit more about this. So first of all, it is an interesting feature, the fact that it exists at least classically stable regular black hole geometry. So in the class of regular black hole, there is at least one geometry which is classically stable from the quantum perturbation we should study at some point. But at this stage, there is no motivation. There is no work that tells us that we should consider this metric. Because as I mentioned before, all the two models inspired by quantum gravity give us something which the surface gravity is null. And in order to make sense of the inner extreme black hole, I will say that we should answer to this question here. What is the back reaction of the mass inflation instability? So I've shown that there is an instability which is completely general. And we know that in general relativity, this usually leads to a singularity, which is at the inner horizon, which is nice because it gets rid of the Cauchy horizon. But here we are devising, we have some theory, or at least some toy model that worked in a way to get rid of the initial instability at r equals zero. And now we are getting something which is dynamically, it's growing and it's reproducing the instability. So I would expect that whatever physics in this toy model worked to, perfect, to get rid of the initial instability will work also to get rid of the mass inflation instability. And so what can happen? This will be something model dependent that will be very interesting to study. And the way I see it, I see two main options. First of all, we might have an expansion of the inner horizon. So the inner horizon, because of the Peggy reaction of the instability, if you don't want to form a singularity, it must grow out. And this would actually be great for observation because it will be a mechanism that is telling us that maybe we can have deviations which are larger than what we would naively expect. Because if the inner horizon is a Planck size, you will never observe them. Or the other thing is that you go to the only object that we know so far in this class, which have no stability problem, and this will push the surface gravity to decrease. And this will be a conservative resolution to the singularity problem, will not be an exciting one because there will be very low observational signature, but still it will be interesting. So what it will be very interesting to do is to take some of these quantum gravity models that describe regular black hole, like loop quantum gravity, asymptotic safety, or something else, and see what is the back reaction of this instability. It's not easy, but it's probably possible to do, and it will be very interesting to know. What about the ultra-compact objects? Ultra-compact objects are at the center of the observational efforts because they have much more hope to give some observational feature. And so it would be nice to have to address their stability problem. And for this, so first of all, as I mentioned before, we have an inner light ring and we can prove completely universally that there is an inner light ring. The mechanism that it links the inner light ring, which is a stable light ring, to the piling up of perturbation is also completely universal. But I don't know if the instability is universal and if we can build something which is unstable or at least which is stable on a very, very long time scale. And the reason why I say I don't know is that if you look at boson stars, you can show that they can exist up to a maximum value of the mass. So if you pile up energy locally, you can easily exceed this fundamental limit, and then you are forced to either migrate to a non-compact configuration or to collapse into a black hole. But there are some objects that are that do not have this this problem of the maximum mass, and for instance, objects that are supported by semi-classical effects, which are, I would say, quite well justified because we expect semi-classical gravity to provide the first correction to general relativity, and it should be the dominant correction in some regime, of course not in all regime. And there are static solutions already that that are built with this stress energy tensor, with this equation of motion. I am doing some work on this field, but both because of time and both because I don't have some precise result to show yet, I will not talk much about it, but just want to say that this looks a promising area to look for, to get some ultra-compact object which is well justified and possibly stable. Also because something else that I didn't mention is that the inner light ring is usually inside the object, and so the physics inside the object might be very difficult and might enter into whether or not you will form the instability or no. How much time do you have? 1 minute. Perfect, because I am in the conclusion slides. So just to recap what I flashed through today. The first sentence, we all know, that calls high theoretical evidence of the failure of the general relativity or the limitation of general relativity. Then I mentioned that we can classify non-singular black hole with only a few classes, and we then specialize in some of them. And both of them seems to be unstable. So the background geometry is perfectly fine, but as soon as we add more small perturbation, you will run into problem. We do have some stable regular black hole geometries, but we don't know if we can form them. Also, maybe if you do not form there, maybe mass inflation will lead to something which is better for observational purposes. Again, we don't know if we can still form ultra-compact objects that are stable. So all in all, there is a lot also about the dynamical formation mechanism. There are things that I didn't discuss today, but they are unknown. So all in all, there are a lot of work to do yet, at least for the classes discussed in this talk. But I want to say that this might not be a negative feature, because if the space of possibility was super huge, then we would not have a lot of predictive power. But in this way, we might have some guiding principle to take some solution of the other, and then we need to connect to observation. I didn't talk today about connection to observation for time constraints, but I'm also very interested in that, so we can discuss whenever you want. So I'll stop here, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Francesco. So we have 5 minutes for questions, either here in the audience or online. If not, I will start. Yeah, there is one there.
Hi, thanks for the talk. Just a question. So you mentioned these extremal regular black holes, and they might, yes. The point is, if the, usually extremal black holes forms after some process, like even in GR, and the problem is that if the mass inflation kicks in before the black holes has reached the extremal configuration.
Yeah, definitely. So, in principle, it doesn't even need to be exactly extremal, because we don't need to be completely stable. We want to be the instability time scale to be very large. So what I was saying, again, I had no idea if this geometry makes sense at this stage, but the only way I can think of making sense of it is this being produced as consistently because of mass inflation. So I would imagine that mass inflation tends to blow up the curvature invariance, and the back reaction will lower the value of K. So dynamically, the value of K keep going lower and lower. But this is complete speculation. This is just so in that way you will not worry too much about the time scale, because it will happen at the same moment, not one first and the other later after.
Nice. So for instance, you have only shown cases of non-rotating let's say black holes or regular black holes, but this condition to use of zero surface gravity to avoid this instability of the mass inflation would be as simple as this also in the case of rotating?
It's not as simple, but it can be done. So it was done.
Okay, it was done.
Yes. I see. So it's you have some other conditions, but I don't think, there was not actually studied. So after putting kappa equals zero, we actually studied we actually confirmed that that this does not lead to instability, but this is kind of this makes sense. This is kind of easy to expect, so it's most likely the case. And just to write a geometry with kappa equals zero in the rotating case, Stefano has done it with Stefano Liberati with some other students. They have done it, and you can do that
without mass inflation instability.
You should still explicitly check, but you should know everything works in the same way.
Okay, thank you. Oh, you have a question? Please.
Thanks, Francesco, for the nice talk. I was wondering, so one of the possibilities that you mentioned was that the inner horizon instability would lead to a growth of the inner horizon. But what picture would you have in mind? So would the inner horizon grow and then somehow swipe with the outer horizon, and what would happen?
So again it would be very interesting to do the numerical nonlinear computation. But yes, so either you have something which keep oscillating and so the perturbation will not build up, or you have something like that it switch with the outer horizon and then you will not have any more instability. But the interesting point is that, at least to me, is that there is kind of some jumps when we study regular black holes, because we study theoretically and we say, okay, this L is probably Planck size. Then we are starting to do, like Astrid, for instance, working a lot on observational. And of course, you cannot constrained Planck size. So you need some mechanism to enhance the size of the inner horizon. So this might be one. I mean, it's speculative. I said, like the last part of the talk, I wanted just to leave questions more than answers. And it could be that you completely close the, so you, well, I don't know what it is anymore. Yeah, you go beyond this stage and you don't have any horizon. This is possible. You have something which oscillates. I don't see any other stable solution.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Please.
Hi, sorry. So sorry if I'm making you repeat something, but you were saying there's a boson star instability. Is that just if you add energy or there's also some...
Sorry? Boson star instability?
The boson star instability, mm-hmm. It's just if you add energy?
Yeah, so it's not like you have to add energy. It's like you're always going to have perturbation. Like boson stars, if they exist, they are not in vacuum. So there will be matter floating around. They will, you will have gravitational waves, you know, like object is spiraling and collapsing. So you always have perturbation. So if you add a small perturbation, given that you have a minimum of the effective potential, that some of the perturbation, rather than being emitted by gravitational wave, will pile up there. And if they pile up there, they attract other perturbations. So you have these nonlinear effects that that works in the direction of growing and growing the energy pile ups there. So it's of course you need to do the full numerical instability, which was done in this paper. The full numerical integration, which was done in this paper. So it's just, you start with boson stars and you have some matter around. And
I think there are also papers from some people in PI saying that they do some nonlinear simulation of boson star and they don't find this instability. Do you have any
Well, maybe you can show me later. I don't know what you're talking, with which paper you're referring now, but.
Okay,
thank you.
Maybe we can discuss this also during the open discussion after the coffee break. So let's thank Francesco again.